And we're live.
Hello, and welcome back to another One Last Look Back at 2012 episode of the First Time Watchers podcast.
Because we like to watch.
My name is Tim Costa.
This is Walter Vinci.
This is Hermano da Silva.
Oh, shit, who's that?
I'm back.
Wow.
I would normally sing here, but I can't.
Why can't you?
Because apparently I'm not feeling all that well. I'm actually wearing a mask.
So you are. You look like a ninja.
I feel like a ninja.
What we like to do on the FTW podcast is find a movie that none of us have seen, watch it together, and then discuss. These movies could be new, they could be old, or something that is on all of our lists of shame. And remember to email us at firsttimewatchers@gmail.com, and stay tuned to the end of this episode for other ways to contact us and to find out what we'll be discussing next week. Speaking of feedback, gentlemen, I'd like to point people in the direction of our friends at the Film Spotting Podcast. They just happened to revisit a certain classic movie. One that happens to be near and dear to my heart.
What would that movie be, Tim?
Die Hard. Before they recorded that episode, they put a call out via Twitter for people to provide insight to this film. And it just so happened I decided to leave a voicemail for them. And lo and behold, they actually played it during their episode. My rambling, incoherence, nonsense. And I couldn't have been more thrilled that they allowed my rambling on their airwaves. Not only that, but, you know, I made a mention of our podcast.
Name dropping.
And they kept it in. So that was really awesome of them to do that. Did you guys, either of you, have a chance to listen to that episode?
I haven't had a chance to get to it yet.
I did, and I thought you sounded very professional.
Okay, if you say so. What did you think of their review?
I mostly agreed with everything they said. I thought maybe they delved a little too deep into the movie, but...
There was some insight that kind of blew my mind. I was like, I would have never thought about it that way. When you have a chance to listen to it, they actually praised the movie for its writing and how it should be presented in screenwriting classes.
In fact, Sid Fields actually presents that movie in screenwriting classes because apparently the original opening was fairly bad, and it actually took a rewrite for him to get it to change it a little bit, straighten it out, and now you've got a hit.
Yeah, interesting. It was just exciting to hear that, you know, that we were able to contribute to that show, and hopefully, you know, it leads a few people to us, you know, to experience what we have to say.
That'd be freaking awesome if it does.
Yeah.
Way to go, Mr. Social Network.
What we're going to do in this episode, we're going to be revisiting our top 10 of 2012 since Hermano is back, and we can finalize FTW's film of the year. So, but before we get into that, it's time for an extended yay or nay. This is the part of the show where we discuss what we have seen recently on our own. Hermano?
Oh, crap. Let me open up my list here real quick. And, okay. Some of these were rewatches. I got a chance to see the movie we just mentioned, Die Hard. Hadn't seen it in a while. Woke up early one morning and it was on, so I was like, hey, let me check this out. And it's okay. you know, from 1988, starring Bruce Willis, Hans Gruber.
Hans Gruber.
You know that guy, Hans Gruber.
Alan Rickman?
Alan Rickman with his bad American accent.
Carl Weathers?
No, there's no Carl Weathers.
The dude from Family Matters.
Was it his name Carl?
Reginald Bill Johnson.
Was his name Carl on Family Matters?
His name was Carl on Family Matters, yes. okay. Anyways, I like the movie. Me and Tim have gone back and forth on which is the greatest American action movie. I believe it's Point Break. He believes it's Die Hard.
And you guys are both wrong because it's actually Top Gun.
All right, hang in with the boys.
Wait, what movie's getting a 3D a 3D release this year?
Top Gun.
Oh, there we go.
Anyways, back to Die Hard.
Anyways, I do like Die Hard quite a bit. I've seen it a bunch of times. I don't love it as much as Tim does. I don't think anyone does. But, I do, you know, appreciate it for what it is. And of course, it spawned so many, you know, copycat movies like Speed and...
Which is not a bad movie.
Under Siege and movies like that, you know. But, yeah, of course I'll say yay on that. Another movie I watched was Raising Arizona.
Oh.
Because that was also on one of my early mornings getting up because of the baby, and I'm like, hey, why not? You know, maybe I get some parenting tips. So directed by, I believe, only one of the Coen brothers. I don't believe it was
Joel.
Both of them. Yes, and I love this movie. I mean, I don't know that I can say it's my favorite Coen brothers movie because technically only one of them directed it, but it's one of
Well, they
my...
both wrote it.
Yeah, so I guess in that sense, it probably is one of my favorites, at least in the top three. I don't know if I even need to go over the synopsis for this movie, but basically, there's like a furniture store salesman who, you know, him and his wife have like five kids, and then, do you want to read the synopsis there on IMDb? You probably do a better job than me.
When a childless couple of an ex-con and an ex-cop decide to help themselves to one of another family's quintuplets, their lives get more complicated than they anticipated.
Yeah, and it's starring Nicolas Cage, Holly Hunter, John Goodman. Awesome movie, man. I mean, so much fun. I mean, you definitely get that. It's one of the early, I think it's probably the earliest movies because I haven't seen Blood Simple yet. You get that sense of, you know, all the movies that have come since, you get the sense that this is where they kind of got to start, and you know, for the feel and looks of their movies and the way they're shot and the way, you know, they get where they, you get these incredibly interesting characters in their movies. And this movie is probably one of the first movies that you actually got to see, you know, where their style came from. So I definitely recommend anyone who hasn't seen it. You know, I mean, people our age have probably, you know, come across this movie, but anybody that's younger that maybe hasn't seen it, definitely go check it out. Raising Arizona is definitely a yay. Another rewatch was The Dark Knight Rises.
Well, really now.
Probably like my fifth time watching it.
Boo.
I can't get enough of this movie. I've spoken at length about this movie already and why I love it. So, you know, go listen to our review. And
we also did a revisit of that.
Yes, exactly.
That
so, which
well.
Is why we've spoken about it at length. And, you know, I love it. So absolutely on that. I got to see a movie on HBO called The Three Stooges.
Oh,
this really? Is some overlap right here.
This is like fueled by like waking up in the middle of the night with the baby, isn't it?
No, this one actually, you know, I usually scan the new Saturday Night Movie on HBO, and this happened to be, you know, the one for the week.
I saw this as well.
Okay, so basically, it's just kind of a redo of anyone that's, you know, used to the Three Stooges. It's pretty much kind of broken up into skits, but following one overarching story.
Yeah, there's three acts, three skits.
Yeah, three skits, but you know, they follow the same main story pretty
yep.
much. And you know, it's the Three Stooges. You know, they're trying to save this orphanage that they were all three left at, and now as adults, they're trying to save it from being closed down. And basically, you know, the shenanigans go from there.
Larry David plays a nun.
I love Larry David. I think he was pretty awesome in this, even though he's not in it very much.
And so does Jane Lynch.
This is interesting.
Yes.
I can't.
Okay, before you start. Okay, so were you a fan of the Three Stooges growing up?
Yes.
Okay, so obviously the Farrelly brothers, who directed this,
yes.
were fans as well.
Absolutely.
And this has been long gestating for them.
Yes.
Originally, you remember the original cast of this?
Like Guillermo del Toro.
Guillermo del Toro was Mo.
No, not Guillermo del Toro. That's
oh,
the director.
I'm sorry, Benicio
yeah,
del Toro.
Yeah, that's
yes.
there.
as Mo. Sean Penn as Larry, and
Jim Carrey
as Curly, and he even gained like 40 pounds for this, getting ready for this role. And before, you know, they all canceled out of this. So they got Sean Hayes to play Larry, Will Sasso to play Curly, and Chris Diamantopoulos to play Mo.
Yeah.
And I gotta admit, they did a damn good job.
Absolutely, I agree. The thing with the movie is it's pretty faithful to
yeah.
what the Three Stooges were.
Yeah.
The thing is I just don't think that kind of comedy works now
right.
as much as it did then. Or maybe it's just a nostalgia thing for me because I was quite young when I was watching the Three Stooges. I was probably, you know, 10.
Yeah.
You know, or something like that. And that kind of comedy, you know, somebody getting hit over the head with a frying pan or a hammer or something is funny.
Yeah.
But you watch it now and it doesn't translate well. Like,
no, you have to have a knowledge of the Three
yeah.
Stooges in order to fully appreciate this, because they recreate a lot of stuff. Like even the story structures of,
yeah.
of the old Three Stooges comedies, like how they set up the situations that they get into, you know, like they need to get into a crash a party, and there's somebody at a gate, but it just so happens that You know, somebody was at the party is saying, "Oh, we're waiting for these balloons to be delivered." You know, and it's just a simple little stupid sidebars just to set up the situation that they're going to get into. And you know, the Three Stooges hear this and they see the van with the balloons and they walk in with the van with the balloons and the guard doesn't stop them. You know, and that's how they get into their situation. They hand the balloons off to this little girl and she goes flying up into the air. You know, so it's those stupid little things that, you know, comedically, they're not original or translate to today's comedy, but they're extremely faithful to the story structure of the old series. And yes, it's quite remarkable.
Yeah, I think they did a fantastic job. The guys that, especially the guy that played Mo, holy crap, he was good. Chris Diamantopoulos.
Yeah.
I thought he was excellent. I thought all of them were overly good, like good overall.
Yeah.
And the thing is, I can't fully recommend it. I would only fully recommend it to someone that was a big fan of the Stooges growing up. To everyone else, I would probably say, man, like,
yeah, I agree.
Maybe, you know, like maybe if you view it like I did, like you did, probably did just on TV, or maybe get it on you know, a DVD or something like that. But otherwise, I just say, man, on it.
Yep.
Quickly, I watched Tremors, which is a guilty pleasure movie for me. That was on TV, starring Kevin Bacon. I actually am a fan of this movie, even though I recognize that it's not overly good.
Oh, it's great B camp fun.
Yes, it's like pretty much like a Hollywood B movie. Pretty much, you know, there are these
people know
what it is. Go watch Tremors, man. Tremors is a great B movie done by Hollywood. You know. All right, now this movie, I'm probably gonna get torn apart by you guys because I think you both really like this. I got a chance to see Dread.
Okay.
Oh, I remember you guys both really liked it or just kind of liked it. I don't...
Wally liked it more than I did.
Okay, but you liked it, though.
I enjoyed it, yeah.
Positive grade. At best, I thought this movie was okay. I remember a lot of positive feedback coming out for this movie. I'm not sure if it came out at a time where, like, there wasn't a lot else coming out.
September.
Yeah, I don't remember what else came out around that time. I feel like maybe it was alone, you know, surrounded by a bunch of other crap movies, but I thought it was just okay. Like, I remember a lot of praise being slung at this movie, and I'm like, as I'm watching it, I'm like, I don't really get it. Like, I'm not a huge Dredd fan. I did watch the original. I thought it was a crap movie, you know, Sylvester Stallone. This one, though, as I'm watching it, I'm like, I don't know, man. There's really nothing about it that really sticks out and makes me go, wow, that is amazing. Like, the story is really simple. It's very similar to The Raid.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Dredd is, you know, stuck in an apartment building after making an arrest or something like that, and he's with this rookie officer that he's training, and they get, you know, shut down in the building by this ruthless drug lord played by I forget her name.
Lena Headey,
and
who's on Game of Thrones?
Yes, she's Cersei on Game of Thrones, and I don't think that she gets enough to do. Like, she barely has any dialogue. Like, she just kind of looks menacing and tells people what to do. And just the way the movie wraps up and stuff, it's very kind of meh. Like, nothing just blew my mind about it. Like, at best, I would say it was okay. Like, I just can't recommend it, man. I would say meh unless you're a huge, like, comic book fan and just have to see everything that's made.
Do you have anything to add to that, Wally?
Well, I think that the reason why Hermano is not, like, too into it is I don't think he's terribly familiar with the Dredd comics.
I'm sure it's super faithful.
It is exactly faithful to the
Dredd
comics.
I just don't think he's like this amazing character. Like, he has no personality, really. He's just kind of always looked pissed off.
Yeah, that's, you know what kind, I mean? That's like, well, it's kind of like he is in the book too, actually.
Exactly, but I mean, it's just the same way. I think for the same reasons they have problems always making the Punisher movies, because that character's always pissed off, and it's like, how do you make this character likable or want audiences able to follow him and just care about him? You know what I mean? Like, I think Dredd's kind of the same in the same. You know, predicament is as those movies. Like, he's not that likable. He's just kind of no personality, and I don't know. I just can't recommend it. Now, I watched this movie as well. I believe Tim liked it. Zero Dark Thirty.
Okay, so we can finally put our grade to rest on this one.
Directed by Catherine Bigelow.
Did you listen to our review of Zero Dark Thirty by any chance?
I did listen to our review. So basically, it's a chronicle of a decade-long hunt for Al-Qaeda terrorist leader, Osama bin Laden after the September 2011 attacks and his death at the hands of the Navy SEAL Team 6. That was pretty good. I think this movie is slightly overhyped. I think this movie, the problem I have with this movie is that I had with a few other movies this year, like Argo and Lincoln, where I know a lot of people are like, "Oh, you know, this is a nail biter. This movie's full of suspense and it's tense and all that stuff." But stuff like that doesn't work for someone who knows the story and knows exactly where it's going to go and how it resolves. Like, I knew the story of, you know, Lincoln trying to get the amendment passed. I knew the story of Argo. Maybe not the full, you know, every single plot element or thing that happened, but I mean, Hollywood always takes, you know, certain, you know, stories and really tries to like pump them up.
Well, I think it's kind of tough to compare this to Argo in terms of adapting a story, because I think Zero Dark Thirty stayed pretty fucking faithful to the story.
No, see, that works against me because all of a sudden there is no tension for me because I know exactly how it's going to end. I know the story. I know maybe not every little step that the character played by Jessica Ch Chastain takes, Maya. Like maybe I didn't know all the inner workings of everything she had to go through and all the trials and tribulations and all that stuff. Like I liked her character a lot, but I thought they took some missteps for me personally. Like I think it was enough to constantly show her on screen as being super determined and always wanting to get her way and to just always seem like one step ahead of everybody. But then they go and try to add layer upon layer onto her. And like there were certain scenes that I just laughed out loud because I
Like
was just,
what?
this is so bad. Like the scene where James Gandolfini walks into the room and everyone seems to be super nervous that he's coming and she looks just super confident, like doesn't care. It's just like whatever, and all the guys, it's all guys, and she's the only female in the room, I believe. And, you know, everyone's like super nervous, like trying to like, you know, teach her, like, hey, act like this, do this, just, you know, keep your mouth shut, let us do the talking. And all of a sudden he just, you know, J James Gandolfini walks in and he asks a question and like, and she's like, I'm the motherfucker who found him or something like, or caught him. And I laughed out loud. I was
Well,
like,
everybody in my theater did because it's a funny moment.
but I don't know, is this supposed to be funny or were they
Yeah.
trying to, I don't, I
I think it was intentionally funny, you know?
see, I didn't get that. I thought they were just trying to make her seem like the killer they paint her out to be. And it just, she just seems like, I don't want to like just bag on her too much because I think her performance is great, but I just feel like they were just really trying to like butch her up or something or try to make her seem like really tough and can hang with the guys or something like that. You know what I
I
mean?
don't think it was a matter of her hanging with the guys. I think it was just a matter of her determination,
Yeah.
because it, at first, obviously, what she's thrown into, it doesn't personally affect her. But over the course of time, it becomes very personal for her, to her.
Yeah, and I thought it would have been enough to just leave it at that because, you know, things do happen in the movie that you know, it starts off and you follow in her and she's thrust right into the middle of this. I mean, this has already been going on for a while and she's thrust right into this search for and you know, Osama bin Laden and she gets to see the dirtier side of maybe everything she wasn't prepared for. And throughout the movie you see her just, you know, get more accustomed and become more determined and things happen that make her really push her and propel her forward. And I thought it would have been left fine at just that, but I thought they just took like some missteps with really trying to, just really trying to push that feeling home that she's just so determined and oh my God, you can't believe how determined she is. And I think it's a well-made movie. I'm not shitting on it. I would actually give it like a B plus. I'm exactly in between
That's
you and
exactly what
Wally.
our grade averaged to.
Yeah, so I'm totally fine with giving it a B plus because I definitely recognize when a movie is well made and it's good. I just feel like this movie just loses something for me because it is based on a true story and I do know all the events,
Yeah,
you
that's
know.
interesting how you took it, because obviously in our review, I said even though I knew how this was going to end,
Yep.
I still was on the edge of my seat, because it was just delivered in such a compelling way.
Yeah, and I definitely see it as one of the best movies of the year, but there's the perfect example for me is I had never seen United 93, but I knew the story of
Yeah,
United
of
93.
course. Yeah.
That movie made me like almost cry. Like
Yeah.
I was totally like in for that movie. I was shaking, I was like pissed, I was angry. It made me go through all these range of emotions. This movie just didn't, even though I feel like I should have.
Yeah, that's the
Because
way I felt.
it is such a powerful, you know, movie. Like you're going after this guy that's like a mass murderer. He killed all these people on September 11th and he's behind it and like I felt like I should be feeling all these emotions and I just didn't feel it the same way I felt in
Wow.
United 93 and those are the two movies like to compare and contrast one movie I knew the events I was blown away the other one I was blown
Well,
away
you
but in a
also
different
have to
way
admit the setting and the the style of United 93 is so different. Obviously, it's so different.
And it's a tighter movie. It's a shorter movie. It's like an hour and a half. Right. This movie's long, and it feels long at times because it feels like they're really just not leaving anything out. Like, they left everything in. I can't imagine this movie being any longer. But I would definitely recommend it. I mean, it's definitely a well-made movie. I recognize that, and I just, you know, I have a few problems with it, but otherwise I'd definitely say yay on it.
All right. So that's a B-plus average for that from our podcast, and you can go back and listen to it if you want to hear a more extensive analysis from Wally and me.
Just real quickly, I rewatched the 1999 TV series called The Storm of the Century. Have either of you guys ever seen this?
No.
It's based on a Stephen King book. Small village off the mainland is about to receive a huge winter storm. It won't just be a storm for them.
Is that the one that starts the series starts off with a guy in a jail cell?
Yes.
I've only seen the first episode of this.
Yeah, it's like a three-parter. I love it. It's basically revolves around this guy showing up on this small town. I think it's this small island off the coast of Maine called, I think it's called Little Tall Island or something like that. I don't know if it's real or fictional. Basically, he shows up and things just start happening on the island, and there are all these like mysterious messages that all of them say the exact same thing: "Give me what I want, and I'll go away." And they trace it back. The sheriff of the town, played by I think Tim Daly, traces it back to this stranger on the town because it is a small island, and you know, when someone shows up that no one recognizes, they automatically assume it's him. So they put him in a jail cell, and things are still happening, and they're just not sure why. Like, they thought they'd have their man. And I won't go much further than that, but I think this is one of Stephen King's better stories. It's similar to other stories I've read in the past, specifically stories like The Lottery and stuff like that. If you've read any of those books, it kind of, in a way, is like those, or even kind of like, not really, but in some elements of The Wicker Man. But I would definitely recommend Storm of the Century. It is kind of long. It's like a 4-hour, 17-minute miniseries.
257 minutes total.
Yeah, so I definitely recommend it, though. It's pretty well done, and where it goes is it's pretty dark, and you know, I love my dark endings. So I'm not going to talk about Silver Linings because we're going to do a full review on that.
Yes.
Okay, so I'll skip that. I watched a
movie. You do have a lot to talk about.
Yeah, it's been a while since we last recorded. I'll be quick. There's only three more.
It's okay.
I watched Compliance. Do you guys
I want to see this.
I want to see this as well.
I recommend you guys see it, but this movie is going to piss you the fuck off.
I believe it.
Okay, so the synopsis is, when a prank caller convinces a fast food restaurant manager to interrogate an innocent young employee, no one is left unharmed, based on true events. Now, I'd heard of this story, but I didn't really ever look into it or do any kind of research on it. I just watched the movie because it was recommended off of another podcast. As I'm watching it, and you're seeing the story unfold, me and Mia were watching it together, and we're just looking at each other constantly and being like, this cannot be how it happened. Like, this has got to be one of those cases where, you know, someone is taking a lot of, you know,
creative license
with the actual story and trying to, you know, make it more exciting, you know, for the movie. And looking into it, it's incredibly accurate.
Really?
Like, you can actually go onto YouTube and watch the actual surveillance footage of the incident. Maybe not the darker elements of what happened. I don't want to spoil it for you guys.
No, don't spoil it.
But trust me, you guys are going to go through so many range of emotions. You're going to be pissed. You're going to be shocked. You're going to be blown away. You're going to be blown away at the stupidity of people. It's insane, but apparently this isn't the only incident. There's like, at least, I think at the end of the movie, they state that there's a documented 70 times this happened.
Yeah.
And this movie is based on the call, the prank call that went the furthest. All
right.
And resulted in something horrific happening. And I couldn't believe that this actually happened. And the one thing I do like about the movie is the message, which is like, I mean, it's named Compliance. And for good reason, because this isn't a spoiler. The guy on the phone pretends to be a police officer.
Yep.
And, you know, if someone called you and said, "Hey, I'm a police officer," you automatically see authority. And you're like, "All right, I got to listen to this dude or else I'm going to get in trouble."
Yeah.
And it just kind of trickles down from there, because all of a sudden the workers of the place are compliant to the manager, because they're like, "Hey, I got to listen to this person. They're in a position of authority. If I don't do what they say or listen to them, I'm going to lose my job."
Yeah.
So it just the way it trickles down, and it's crazy where this movie goes. I definitely recommend seeing it, but it's not for everyone. It's going to piss a lot of people off, but it's based on a true story, and I applaud them for not sugarcoating it and telling the story the way it happened. So I definitely recommend you guys see it. It's a tough watch. It's not easy. All right, two more. I watched a movie. This is the movie that I started watching, but I didn't finish, so I won't go too far into it. I had this low on my list, and I must have had a lot of long waits before it because I wasn't that interested in seeing it, but I got to watch Detention. Have
I
you, either of
wanted
you
to see
guys?
this.
Okay. This movie directed by Joseph Kahn, who directed Torque. I think it's his only other feature movie. So basically, the plot is as a killer named Cinder Hella stalks the student body at the high school in Grizzly Lake, a group of co-eds band together to survive while they're all serving detention.
No, sorry. Pass.
This movie, Wally, is kind of like Scott Pilgrim on acid, except without all the video game fun of that movie. It's ridiculous. This movie, it's crazy. Like, I know you like crazy movies, like John Dies at the End, and you like the skeleton of Cadaver and all those crazy movies. I'd be fucking blown away if you like this movie because
Please don't be ever be surprised with what he likes and he doesn't like.
I'm actually like 50-50 that Wally might like this movie because
It's in my queue, actually. It's right after the two movies I've got right
Joseph
now.
Kahn sounds familiar.
He directed Torque.
Oh,
He's
yeah, you just
been
said
on
that. That's right. Oh,
he's
yeah.
directed a bunch of music videos mostly, I think.
Yeah.
Britney Spears, shit like that.
Yeah.
Basically, the movie is so fucking just hyper fast, and it's definitely directed at like a high school audience because the dialogue in this movie is like complete. Like I felt old watching this movie. Like I had no fucking clue what they were talking about half the time, and their dialogue was just some kind of like, it was like a fucking acid trip. Like the movie's pacing is ridiculous. It's not based on reality.
How did
Like
you
things happen in the movie that just are like, what the fuck is? Where the hell did that come from?
how did you even hear about this movie?
I think I heard about it a while ago, and it just kind of was in the back of my mind that I couldn't remember quite if I heard it was good or bad. I don't know, but I got it, and I got me and I watched it, and I got about an hour in. It was an hour and a half long, and I couldn't even be bothered to watch the last half an hour to see how it resolved, because I just thought it was that unwatchable for me personally. I mean, I can see where like a young this movie is definitely made for people that are 25 and under. Like this, I can't imagine anyone that's much older than that actually watching this and being like, oh hells yeah, that was the best. It's got like a 45 Metascore on IMDb. I can't recommend it, man. I gotta say nay on it, man. It just wasn't for me. I just think I wasn't the target audience for this movie, and there's nothing wrong with that. And lastly, I saw a movie that I think Tim will appreciate. It's actually a 30 for 30 movie from ESPN called Winning Time, Reggie Miller versus the New York Knicks. Now, Tim probably was watching basketball back in the 90s like I was. I'm
Oh
not sure
yeah.
if Wally did.
I'm not a basketball fan.
Tim will be able to speak on this as well.
Yeah, I've seen parts of this, I think.
Basically, there's two teams. There's the Indiana Pacers and the New York Knicks.
Bit of rivals at the time.
Bitter rivals at the time, but it only started after all of a sudden the Eastern Conference in the NBA was wide open because Michael Jordan retired and went off to play baseball. So all of a sudden, the Chicago Bulls weren't the dominant force, and it felt like anybody could win. So the New York Knicks had been stopped by the Bulls in like the Eastern Conference Finals so many years in a row, and they were finally all of a sudden everyone had just pushed them to the top, said this is their year, they're gonna win. Michael Jordan's not here to stop them. And lo and behold, here comes a small market team, Indiana Pacers, with this trash talking Reggie Miller, and
One of the best shooters of all time.
yeah, he just all of a sudden this upstart team kind of gets in the New York Knicks' way, and it's a pretty fun movie. I think the
Oh,
only
it's not
people,
fun if you're a Knicks fan.
or if you're Spike Lee.
if you're Spike Lee, that's the thing. That's the area where this movie goes that I thought was the best. About the last third of the movie deals with the fact that, I mean, it's not a spoiler. Spoiler for real life. The
Yeah.
Knicks end up losing in the
Yeah, in a
playoffs
heartbreaking
to
way.
the Knicks in a very heartbreaking way, especially if you're Patrick Ewing,
Yeah,
because he misses a layup at the last, second of this game that would have sent them into the finals, or I think the Eastern Conference Finals, not the finals. But basically, the movie goes into how the Knicks fans all kind of blamed Spike Lee for goading Reggie Miller on and trash talking him because the Knicks had a lead. They were up like two games to none, and And, you know, Spike Lee is just trash talking Reggie Miller because he's a trash talker himself. And all of a sudden, he just lit a fire under Reggie Miller and he just set him off. And like all the newspapers, they even interview Spike Lee, and it's awesome because he's a good sport about it. And all the New York papers were painting Spike Lee as a villain and like, it's your fault we lost. And it kind of goes into that. Like, is it really like Spike Lee's fault that they lost? Is it really his fault that he was, you know, trash talking Reggie Miller? But I would recommend it, but only to people that are, you know, fans of the NBA and
Or sports fans.
sports fans will get a kick out of it because it deals with, you know, rivalries, especially, you know, this big market team like the New York Knicks, who are like one of the largest markets. You know, you can't get bigger than New York or Los Angeles, and you know, this little small market team like Indiana, and it kind of goes into the fans of each team and stuff like that. So I definitely say yay on it, and that's it.
Would you believe he did this all in one breath?
Yes, I do. Anyways, okay, I'll go next because I have a lot of movies to go through too, and I'll try to be as brief as possible. First off, American Reunion. This is the 2012 movie that reunites everybody from the American Pie franchise. If you're a fan of the first two American Pies, as I am, the third one, American Wedding, is not good at all. But I have to say, American Reunion, not that bad. Really faithful to the it's like a reunion. It's like going back and visiting your friends from past. It's pretty faithful. It does a good job of introducing all the characters back together. Stifler, Sean William Scott character Stifler was always very popular in the first, popular character in the first two films. In the third film, they made him like fucking retarded. It was just somebody who all of a sudden had brain damage. In this one, he tones it down a little bit, not nearly as charmingly asshole-ish as he was in the first two, but still not nearly as annoying as the third one. There's a nice twist at the end. Stifler, I'm not going to say. There's a some gross out humor again, which is perfectly acceptable. And there is something that I always find hilarious, and that's male full frontal nudity. I always find absolutely hilarious, especially if you've seen Forgetting Sarah Marshall. That is
Yeah, that scene of
hilarious.
Sarah Marshall is pretty sad.
But it's so funny. It's
It's funny,
so
but at the same
funny.
time, you're like, you gotta feel for Jason Segel.
So actually, I have to say a yay for American Reunion. Especially if you're a fan of the franchise. Next, it was a rewatch for me, a movie that was the second film that we re ever reviewed on the First Time Watchers podcast, and that's Mission Impossible: Ghost Protocol. And I remember us not being as high on it as everyone else was at the time. People at the time were saying, "Hey, this is the best Mission Impossible yet, and this movie is amazing. Brad Bird does a great job." And we were all kind of meh on it, relatively average about it. And I've been hearing recently again about this movie coming up in other podcasts and other people talking about it and praising it again. And I was like, "What?" And it was on Netflix Instant, so I had to rewatch it again just to see, was there anything that I was missing? And no, I don't think we missed anything on our original review. It has some amazing set pieces, amazing sequences, but the bad guy just doesn't do it for me. And once again, I still compare it to Mission Impossible 3, which I still think is the best action film of the last 10 years. Wally, you still have to see this movie.
I do.
And when you have a villain played by Philip Seymour Hoffman so deliciously in Mission Impossible 3, it's hard to top it, and the villain is really bland in Mission Impossible: Ghost Protocol. There is too much humor used throughout the movie in Mission Impossible: Ghost Protocol. I like me some Simon Pegg, just like I said with Star Trek. I like me some Simon Pegg, but there is such a thing as too much Simon Pegg and too much humor. I thought Paula Patton did a fine job. I like her kicking ass. Although I will say the ending completely negates her kick ass ability to kick ass. I had forgotten how that they completely cut her legs underneath her to have a different ending, if you will. So, yeah. And there's some technology in there that we had commented on that just absolutely makes no sense whatsoever. You know, when you have one machine that does this one job and it doesn't make any sense why it does it, you know, and other stuff. So I have to say meh on Mission Impossible Ghost Protocol. Next, I think one of your favorite movies of the year, Hermano, Beast of the Southern Wild.
Whoa.
Starring Kevenzie Wallace and Dwight Henry, and directed by Ben Zeitlin. It was the first time directing job of him, I think.
Yep.
And a lot of praise for this movie. I think it was like Josh Larson's on FilmSpotting's number one movie of the year. Kevenzie Wallace has gotten a lot of praise, and she is up for Best Actress in the Oscars. So here's the thing that I have with kid actors. I have no problem with kid actors being nominated for Oscars, because there's a lot of debate over that, whether or not a child actor, especially as young as she was 6 years old when she filmed this, and as somebody as young as her deserves a nomination. And I think if they do a good job, of course, you can only credit her for what you see on screen, you know? However, in this movie, almost all of her dialogue, I would say about 85 to 90% of her dialogue is narrated. It doesn't come from her as the movie is going on. It's narrated her over her actions on screen. So to me, it's not nearly as impressive as somebody like Haley Joel Osment in The Sixth Sense when he was 9 years old or something like that when he filmed that, and all of his dialogue is spoken on screen, and he acted, and he was nominated for Best Actor or Best Supporting Actor for that year, and that was deservedly so. I don't think she is deserving being nominated for this role, simply because the strength of her performance is mainly because of her ADR, her post-production work on recording her narration.
I don't fully agree with that. I mean, I think that's like kind of like, when a person looks at a glass half empty, glass half full. You know what I mean? Like, she still had to act. An acting performance is not just vocals. What you say. It was in her, just her body language and just the way she would, just facially, like everything. Like, I thought she was awesome in that movie. Her and the father, like their interactions whenever they were on screen together was fucking phenomenal. Like, I thought, especially for first-time actors, you got to keep that in the back of your mind too, that these are two first-time actors, never acted before, from a first-time director who's giving them direction. I mean, that's like a recipe for disaster. And they turned out, I think, something pretty damn
Well,
special.
I give more credit to the director for this, for coaxing this. This director has talent. I want to see what he does in the future. What he was able to do in this land, this area of Louisiana, the swamp area, and make it look as gorgeous sometimes as a Terrence Malick film is tremendous. He does a good job of coaxing all of these pretty much non-actors or amateur actors to these performances that are really compelling, you know, and you wonder where the story is and the metaphors that it's going for, and the just the story of this girl and how determined she is, you know, and ultimately the ending, you know, the metaphorical ending, you know, with the beasts, if you will, you know. It's well done. It's obviously worth a look. It was only 1 hour and 33 minutes. It felt a little longer than that, though.
I remember kind of going quick.
But I'll give it a yay. It's a good movie. Next is a movie that's been on my list of shame since 1995, and that's Heat, starring Al Pacino and Robert De Niro and Val Kilmer.
How is this on
I don't know.
your
I don't know. Okay. Talk about a long movie. This movie is too long.
Oh, I disagree, sir.
No, th this movie has a few side plots that are unnecessary for the overall plot of the movie. When you have a background of Dennis Haysbert's character, who's just out of jail and getting a job at the at a restaurant, and then it ties in later, you know. But you have his backstory and his relationship with his girlfriend or wife or whatever, and she wants him to do better, you know, and stay out of trouble, and he just has trouble staying out of trouble. I don't need that. That's not necessary because the payoff at the end for what happens to him, emotionless. I didn't care, you know. The side plot of Al Pacino's stepdaughter, played by Natalie Portman, and the she's in three scenes, and those three scenes are completely unnecessary. The women in this film are treated and written like shit. They add nothing. They do nothing but provide obstacles, emotional and physical obstacles, for the male characters in this movie. I think Michael Mann has in later films written women and overall scripts much better. Obviously, you know, this is not really it's not his first film, but it's earlier in his career. You know, after the whole Miami Vice seasons were done, and you know, it was a few years after that. And there's definite influence, you know, from his Miami Vice style to this. And obviously, you see a lot of his styles in this movie and future movies, which he cleaned up a lot. You know, the shootouts, the robbery scenes of the movie are fantastic. I like the final showdown, which is really good. It's just it should have been tighter. It's 2 hours and 50 minutes long. It could have easily cut half an hour off of this. You know, it would have been a lot tighter, a lot nicer. But still, I give it a yay because it's a fine movie. Next, I'll talk about a movie from 1971 called Harold and Maude. This movie is fucking incredible. I had this movie in my Netflix instant queue for a while, and I had always, you know, heard great things about it. But I was like, I don't know if I feel in the mood to watch this movie. The plot is a young, rich, and obsessed with death. Harold finds himself changed forever when he meets lively, 79-year-old Maude at a funeral. And because he attends funerals of people he doesn't even know, because he's obsessed with death, he enacts. Reenacts, not reenacts, he pretends suicide in his own home in multiple different ways and tries to scare his mother, and it's done in hysterical ways. Have you seen this, Romano?
No, I've never seen
Oh
it.
my God. Oh my God. You guys have to see this
Is this a
movie.
comedy?
It is a comedy drama. There are definite comedic elements in it that are hilarious. Well, I think you would really enjoy this film because the tone of this movie. It is dark at times, but just darkly humorous. There's things that he does which are just so hysterical because in 1971, his mother is fed up with him. I don't know how old he is. He looks sometimes like he's 15. Other times he looks like he's 22. So he's probably around between 18 and 21. His mother is fed up with him and his antics at this time where he where she. Finds these dating services for him to find a woman to marry, you know, and she has these people over, and he finds ways to have these girls running out of the house screaming.
Oh, that sounds like my kind of movie
Oh my
already.
God! And it happens about three or four times, and it's hilarious. But he develops this relationship with this 79-year-old woman, Maude, played beautifully by Ruth Gordon. This movie is so gorgeous. I cannot praise this movie enough. It's heartbreaking at the end, and it's touching. It's funny. It's great. She is like the complete opposite of him, where she just enjoys life. She steals cars because she doesn't own a car, but she just takes cars randomly from the side of the road. There's this run-in with a police officer on the highway, which is hysterical. This movie is great. I totally recommend you guys watching this. This was just got off of Netflix Instant, so that's why I watched it so recently. Next movie that was I only have two more movies to talk about. Okay, a movie that was on your top 10, Wally, of the
Oh.
year, Goon. I've been trying to catch up with my 2012 movies, and I was interested based on what you had said about the movie. Not nearly as thrilled with it as you were.
That's because you don't like hockey.
No, it's not because of that. Because I had no problem watching hockey movies. I have no problem watching sports movies with sports that I'm not interested in. I like soccer movies. Soccer movies are fine. I hate soccer. Soccer's boring to me. Hockey is boring to me. I enjoy hockey movies. Miracle. Miracle's a fucking awesome movie. Love Miracle. I don't know. There are elements of this movie which are pretty good, pretty funny. Although I didn't get what Sean William Scott was going for with his character. He at times
Seems retarded,
he
right?
seems retarded. Yes, he seems mentally challenged.
And he shouldn't be played that way. It should be
But
a
he even references his own mental capacity at one time during the movie when his parents when he's on a you know a having dinner with his parents and his brother. But the thing that whole the spurs on this whole rage that gets him involved in the situation. I know it says it's based on a true story. How this really led to, this player, him and his best friend are at a hockey game at an amateur league hockey game, and there's a player that goes into the penalty box, and all the people in the stands are booing and hissing and yelling obscenities at this player. And he actually, this player's in the penalty box, actually gets eye contact and is talking, gets to talking with Sean William Scott and his friend, his buddy, played by Jay Baruchel. And so the player goes over the glass and starts charging him, and then in the middle of his obscenity, starts talking about. The sexual preference of his friend and how he's gay, in light in more strong terms, of course. But it just so happens that Sean William Scott, his brother is gay, so he gets enraged by this and starts beating the shit out of this guy, and breaks the guy's helmet with his own fists, and he doesn't isn't even affected when the other guy starts punching him in the head. The coach sees this and he says, "Why don't you try off our team?" And he can't skate for shit, can't play for shit. He's just gonna be a goon, fighting people. And there's this side plot with Liev Schreiber. I liked Liev Schreiber's character. I found him charming and interesting. And of course, there's gonna be an inevitable showdown. But ultimately, I just didn't know what tone this movie was going for, if it was going for heartfelt and sweet, or completely over the top comedic. I didn't think the balance was there. I don't know. And also, especially with the recent issues with concussions and the symptoms from playing high level contact sports such as hockey and football and dealing with concussions, this is barely even touched this issue. And I think it's something that should have been observed a little bit better. The long-term ramifications of this kind of damage that these goons can inflict, because and they don't they also don't really focus on the relationships between the goons and the fans, because only the home fans love their own goons, but hate
hate everybody
everybody
else.
else's goons, which is like real life,
Yep.
But if they focused a little bit more on that and people the relationship of the fans hating these goons, because I don't follow hockey, but whenever I hear about hockey being talked about on sports talk radio, everybody hates the goon, if they're on the other team. So I don't know. I just found this movie meh.
Oh, Tim, you break my heart.
Oh. Finally, I'll talk about another movie that was on my list of shame, and I know you guys love this. From 1981, directed by Sam Raimi, starring Bruce Campbell. Woo! The Evil Dead.
Yeah.
So yes, I know I should throw myself out this window, like Hans Gruber, for not never seeing this movie. This movie is pretty good. This is really good. This is pretty incredible what they were able to do then, because there's some genuine creeps in here. That there's a lot of stuff borrowed from other movies that make, but they still make it really original. There's like elements of The Exorcist in here, especially when you see like one character when she's first possessed, starts floating in front of a window, and I was like generally creeped out by that. I was like, whoa, but then there's other stuff, with the girl, the demon trapped underneath the floor, and always giggling and cursing this cannonball, and then shit just goes nuts, and then of course the I had seen bits and pieces of this movie in the past, so I had seen the tree rape scene, which is pretty funny, and I wonder in the remake of well, actually, I think I'm pretty sure that they're gonna,
They show a clip of it in the
yeah,
in the trailer.
it got an NC-17 rating, and they had to recut it to get an R rating, for the remake coming out this year. But there's some really really cool stuff in here. You love to see Sam Raimi early in his career with his camera work of the camera at the at almost next to the ground and just following the eye level of this demon, I guess, or whatever. So yeah, this is pretty good. I would definitely recommend this movie. Of course, there's some dated stuff, but it's not going to distract you enough from not enjoying this movie. So that's a yay for The Evil Dead. I'm done. Wally, you're next.
All right, I think I've only got like what, two movies?
Okay.
Let's see. We'll start with Hansel and Gretel Witch Hunters.
Uh-oh.
Oh my God, Wally.
All right. Well, looking to get out of the cold, looking to find something to do. Went to go see Hansel and Gretel Witch Hunters. Come to find out, the only version that was playing when we got to the theater was in 3D.
Oh my God.
Watched it in 3D. 3D doesn't really help this movie. I have a huge problem with anachronistic weapons, and that's like the first problem I have with this is that people have six shooters and like Jeremy Renner has a pump action shotgun, which wouldn't be invented until way later. And it's supposed to be like the 16th century. Famke Jensen as the lead witch.
You sound so dejected.
I was. I expected so much more fun out of this. Like I was like, there's some really cool gross out moments. Like in it, where people like there's like one guy who they send some hunters out to go find the missing children at the very beginning, and Hansel and Gretel are at the tavern and they're talking about what they're gonna do with their particular witch hunt, and this guy walks in and he's like, I have a message for you all, and at that point you see Jeremy Renner kind of grab Gemma Arterton and like kind of put him in front of her because he doesn't look up from the table. The guy explodes into like a giant gore fest of like blood and maggots. And she's just saying, you see, just get, you see, you know, Gemma Arterton there just going, the curse of the undying hunger. yeah, this movie's kind of a nay. There are some, like, cool parts to it overall.
You can't even take it as B-leveled, just
It's,
turn off your brain and watch
even if you
this
turn off
for
your brain,
empathy.
like, this, I mean, there's too many things that, like, that stand out, like, the weaponry, first off. Like, you know, it's supposed to be, like, the Middle Ages. Jeremy has a Gatling gun. Other guys have like six shot revolvers. He's got the only clever thing that I think in the movie is that you see Hansel and Gretel at the very beginning as kids get taken in by the witch and Hansel's forced to eat candy, and then he's got this little wristwatch on his wrist that like dings every couple hours.
He has a watch on his wrist in the 16th century.
Yep, but it's like a clockwork thing. It's like
Wow.
physically like wind it because if he doesn't take his medicine, he gets sick.
Oh my God.
Because apparently he got diabetes
In the
from
16th
in the
century.
16th century, and like other people know what this is. Like he's like leaning and like there's another character that's talking to him, and she's like, he's like, what's he's what is that? He's like, ever since I was with the witch, she made me eat so much candy that if I don't take this medicine every couple hours,
Oh
I
my
get really
God.
sick. And
Holy
she goes, you have
shit.
the sugar sickness.
Oh my God. Oh my God.
He has like on his like thigh, he's got like this like med pack of like full of like old school syringes, and he just like jabs one in his leg, and he's like, I feel better. This movie's kind of a nay.
Okay.
Yeah,
Kind of an A. You sound torn.
I am kind of torn because I mean,
Oh my God.
there's some elements in it that are actually pretty cool. Like, oh, like this is kind of neat. Like, this is kind of cool. But then, like, they do something completely different. Like, oh, that's not as cool as I thought it was gonna be. So yeah, it's kind of a nay. It brings me to I'll finish on an up note and talk about Doctor Who. I'm watching the first season of the new series.
Oh, the new series.
Yep.
Okay.
And I liked Doctor Who as a kid. And I don't remember
Oh,
much of
started
it
in
as a kid.
2005.
Yeah. It's got it's Eccleston and Billy Piper in it.
David Tennant.
No, not David Tennant. This is I can't think of the guy's first name. His last name is Eccleston. And the companion is played by Billy Piper. This is awesome. I'm right now currently binging on the first series, and I'm almost to the third disc, and I haven't been. These episodes are just fantastic. The
So what
doctor.
exactly is it about, if for people who are not familiar?
All right. The doctor is a time traveling alien, in a spaceship called the TARDIS, which stands for Time Relative Distance in Space. And he basically goes from time period to time period on. And discovers various like alien or supernatural threats to the Earth, and goes to stop them. The first episode, Rose is in a department store and she gets attacked by mannequins, which you find out are made of living plastic. And he has to find where the central creature is that's controlling all these mannequins. And it's really cool because at the end of the episode. All the mannequins in London come to life and start killing people. And it's one of those things, like, how do you stop a mannequin? Because they just keep coming. They're made out of plastic. You take their head off, but they keep going. And he has to find like the living. He's got this vial of anti-plastic that he has to put in to stop the creature in the end. It's like
So each episode is like
a monster of the
a
like
monster of
mo
the
monster
week.
of the week. There are a couple of two-part episodes in there too that are really good. But the acting is well done. The special effects are fairly cheap. But I mean, it's amazing what you can do with just a blue light and people screaming at it. But this is a yay all the way. Like, if I am a little Johnny come lately to the new Doctor Who, but I absolutely love this.
Very good. That's it for you?
That's all I got for this week.
All right, good. Now we can finally move in and let's talk about revisit our top 10 of 2012. First off, let's just remind everyone what my and Wally's top 10 were before we get to Hermano's. And Hermano, feel free to interrupt as we go along, just to comment on a movie on our list if you'd like.
Okay.
All right. Wally, I'll remind everybody what your
Yeah,
top
'cause
10
I don't have my
was.
list on me.
Your number 10 was Girl Walk All Day. Number 9 was John Dies at the End. Number 8 was Sleepless Night.
Boo.
I knew that was coming.
Number 7 was The Raid. Number 6 was Goon. Number 5 was Looper. Number 4 was The Gray. Number 3 was Hitchcock. Number 2 was Seven Psychopaths. And number 1 for Wally was Life of Pi.
That's right.
Hells yeah.
Okay. My number 10 was Premium Rush.
Ooh.
You haven't even seen it.
I don't need to.
Number 9 was Cabin in the Woods. Number 8 was Argo. Number 7 was Skyfall. Number 6 was The Avengers. Number 5 was Sleepless Night. Number 4 was Moonrise Kingdom. Number 3 was Looper. My number 2 was Haywire. And my number 1 was Zero Dark Thirty. Okay, Hermano, let's get to yours.
All right, since we're running kind of long, I'll try to be fairly brief. My number 10, I think one of Wally's favorite movies of the year, I'm pretty sure he left it out and he feels terrible about it, is Cloud Atlas.
No!
Oh, Wally.
Pretty ambitious film.
It's one of the reasons I put it on my list is not only I actually genuinely appreciated the movie, I do, completely submit to the fact that it has problems, mostly the makeup. But I mean, as far as ambition, as far as originality, as far as scope of film and balancing like pretty much six different genres into one movie, I think they did a phenomenal job. And I'm personally happy that movies like this are still being made and it's not just a bunch of Hansel and Gretel's witch hunters. So, I mean, definitely worthy of being, at least in my top 10. No, my number 9, I'm actually kind of surprised neither one of you had it in your top 10 because I'm pretty sure, I think it was in Wally's top 5 of the year when we originally did that, was Chronicle.
Yeah, I put them in the same category as superhero movies.
Okay, so you didn't have any superhero movies you wanted to.
In my top 10 list, the superhero movies are kind of all got. I grouped them all together as a big honorable mention that there's a lot of really good superhero movies.
Okay.
But Chronicle didn't leave me with anything like afterwards. Like I watched it, like, that was awesome. That was like live action Akira, and now I moved on. Like
Okay.
it didn't have any sort of lasting effect on me.
For me, it did have a lasting effect. Because I mean, for years I've been hearing the rumblings of like live action Akira and so many disappointments when, it just never gets made. And I'm such a huge fan of Akira, and It's one of the first animes I've ever saw, and I thought the movie was pretty well done, especially on a small budget. I mean, this is another movie where I'm like, I was in awe of what they were able to accomplish with, like, I think it was a first time director, I believe, as well. And they took something that I personally, I geek over like crazy. I mean, like, telekinesis and just, running across something that gives you superpowers. I mean, I just nerd out over that stuff. So
Yeah, directed by Josh Trank.
yeah, and also I thought it was a pretty well done movie. I mean, a bunch of pretty much no name actors, and I think they all handled, themselves pretty well in the movie, and it made you, at first I didn't really know if I was going to care about any of these characters. Some of them came off as douchey, but by the end, I mean, I think they definitely did a complete 180 for me, and just the way where it goes, man. I mean, I was just complete geeking out over this movie. So
And he's, I think, still announced for the Fantastic Four reboot.
yeah, I look forward to, what he's
Oh,
able to
that
do
should be
with that.
interesting.
My number eight, I'm just going to quickly mention because I've talked about this movie at length, is The Dark Knight Rises. I was actually surprised you didn't have this on your list either,
Again,
Wally.
superhero movies.
I know Wally didn't like it. I mean, excuse me, Tim didn't like it as much as we did, but
Not nearly as much.
I've talked about this movie at length. I'll just move on to my number seven, which is another movie I believe Wally must have accidentally left off, because I'm pretty sure he loved this movie. Prometheus.
No.
I honestly, as I was thinking about it, I was like,
No, wait a minute, wait a minute. Is that is are all these movies in order for you?
no, I'm sorry, I didn't mention. Much like last year, my top three are absolutely definitive. All my 4 through 10 are just in my list of, my
So
top
you
ten.
didn't necessarily like Prometheus more than The Dark Knight Rises.
No,
Okay.
no. My top three are the only three that are my absolute three favorite movies of the
You
year.
were similar too, right, Wally?
What was that?
You were similar too in
Yeah,
how you ranked
I
it.
keep my only my top three
Yeah.
in particular in an actual order, and the rest are just kind of
I,
as I
however,
think of them.
actually do the work and was able to put everyone in order. Thank you very much. Romano?
Anyways, so
Prometheus.
as I was putting Prometheus on my list, I thought about it and I'm like, I feel like it was the only sci-fi movie that came out this year.
It
Whether
does feel like that,
you don't
doesn't it?
consider Chronicle kind of sci-fi?
I guess, but I mean,
Cloud
it
Atlas,
Cloud
the
Atlas, I
sci-fi
guess,
stuff in
technically
it.
it has sci-fi elements, but the whole
Well,
movie's not
Looper.
sci-fi. I guess Looper technically has
Oh,
sci-fi
yeah.
slash another element.
Western.
Yeah, I mean, but I mean, true sci-fi movie, like we're going to space, like there's spaceships, there's fucking alien life. Like, how many movies?
Knockout.
Oh, fuck off.
No, Space Jail doesn't count.
Space Jail does not count. But anyway, I mean, I love this movie. The movie's gorgeous. Ridley Scott knocked it out of the fucking park. I know that a lot of people shit on this movie. I don't
No,
give a
I
crap.
enjoyed it. I enjoyed it much more than Wally did.
Yeah, I'm a hater here. Oh,
I'm
man.
actually anxious to revisit this one.
I was so. I mean, a lot of people are just like, I don't know, really nitpicking this movie to death, and I really don't get where it comes from. I mean, you're entitled to your opinion, but I mean, I really don't think a lot of the complaints were completely valid, and I wholeheartedly enjoyed this movie. My number six, this one was a super late edition. I just watched it recently. Silver Linings Playbook. It fucking. This is one of those movies that I had no intention of seeing, and I was able to see it a couple weeks ago, and completely blew my mind that I came away from it liking it.
Don't go too much into that, though.
I won't talk too much at length about it, but it's just, I mean, I typically am not one for the romantic comedies, which I can't even fully say that this movie's completely a romantic comedy. I feel like it starts off as a drama and then kind of slowly becomes a romantic comedy, but it kind of surprised me, and that's one of the reasons it's on my list. I typically don't like movies like this, but my number six. My number five, also surprised. I thought Wally had seen this, but Tim leads me to believe that you haven't, and I'm surprised Tim didn't have it on his list. We already talked about this. It's The Master.
I did not see The Master.
You didn't see The Master. Okay, I thought you
The
had.
yeah, the trailer to The Master did gave me no inclination, no incentive to go see it.
I think once you've seen it, you won't know what the hell you just saw, which is kind of how I came away from it. I think Tim was similar.
Well, you also were not as completely enthralled with There Will Be Blood as we were, right?
I mean, I like There Will Be Blood, but I don't think I'm as I'm not as I'm not high up there. It's not high up there for me as it is for you guys.
For me, I still, for Paul Thomas Anderson movies, There Will Be Blood is the tippity top. This movie, I appreciate it. I'm not gonna lie, I don't fully understand what I watched, but I do recognize when I see an incredibly well-crafted movie with a really, really, really good cinematography. The score was awesome from Johnny Greenwood.
Not nearly as memorable though as There Will Be Blood.
No, absolutely not. I agree with you there. But performance-wise, Philip Seymour Hoffman and Joaquin Phoenix, fucking phenomenal. I
Agreed.
would give best actor to Joaquin Phoenix right now.
Over Daniel Day-Lewis?
It's so tough, but I mean, me personally, I feel like he crafted something original from thin air where, at least, Daniel Day-Lewis had something to go on, some kind of history. But yeah, definitely The Master. I definitely recommend people see it for that, those that haven't. That's my number five. My number four, Looper, which was both on both of your lists. Rian Johnson fucking did a great job. I mean, I was a little hesitant, leading up to its release. And I'd been hearing good things, and sometimes movies are overhyped.
And it
And
was delayed as well.
was it delayed?
It was delayed like a year.
Okay. And this movie lived up to the hype for me. I mean, he without going into spoilers, he did something that few movies do well and is kind of balance a few different genres. I thought the story was, an original story for the most part. I mean, there were elements, from other movies, but I mean, overall, I thought, it just did something that just really, appealed to my sensibilities. The whole time travel element and not trying to overexplain it and just letting the movie, stand on its own terms and not trying to feed you a bunch of knowledge that no one's gonna understand anyway because time travel doesn't fucking exist.
Or
So,
so you think.
anyways, so yeah, that's my number four, and now my number three and my top three of the year. These three movies, it's gonna sound lame, but these three movies are the three movies that impacted me the most this year and hit me the most emotionally, and I honestly came close to tears in all three of these movies. And my number three is Beasts of the Southern Wild. I know Tim wasn't as I'm incredibly high on this movie. Like, I know Tim's not. I think the two performances from the little girl
Kavinsky Wallace.
and I think it's Dwight Henry. Phenomenal, man. Their interplay, their back and forth. The setting, this I think it's a fictional place. I don't know that there's an actual place called the
The
Bathtub
bathtub? I
in New
don't know.
Orleans, and dealing with the effects of an unnamed storm,
There are
which
elements like it that do exist.
yes, and it hits close to home with everything that happened with Katrina, and just like there are these fantasy elements, just kind of like just kind of seeing through this child's eyes and watching her, just grow up, and just her father preparing her for the world, and the world is tough, and he's trying to knock this like kind of whimsical, like fantasy, like childlike, behavior from her, and just kind of really trying to prepare her for the world, and the world's tough, and like I said, and I think this movie was great, and like I said, it was a recipe for disaster. A first time director for two first time actors, and for all intents and purposes, it should have been a disaster, but I mean, I think they really crafted something truly special, and I would definitely, recommend people see it if they haven't. My number two was a movie that I didn't even realize Wally had seen, but for a while I was battling, like, is this going to be my number one or is this going to be my number two? Because I loved it that much. Life of Pi.
Yeah, this is my number.
Number
This
one.
my yeah, Seven Psychopaths is my number one. Then I saw Life of Pi like the week before we did the episode, and I was like, nope, new number one.
And I definitely, everything you said, right on. And man, like every the story of this movie and where it goes, like I had never read the book. I had no knowledge of the movie before going into it, other than people said it was good. And I love Ang Lee. I loved everything. I love everything he's done, even that Hulk movie that most people don't like.
I was on the other day and I was watching bits of that and it's just
It's not
not
terrible. I mean,
no,
people. I
sorry.
mean, Hulk is a tough character to make
I
a
think the
story
Edward Norton
around.
Hulk is much better.
Oh, I don't know. See, I don't know. I don't really like that one. But
Anyways, Life of Pi.
Life of Pi, great. I'm totally with Wally because I know they use a CG tiger, but I honestly think this is some of the best CG work I've ever seen.
I really thought
I
it was a real
honestly couldn't
tiger.
tell you when they used the real tiger and when the CG tiger was around. I imagine it's for the most part when he's on the boat, but man, I this movie is so deep. I could talk about this movie forever, so I'm not going to. I'm just going to say it's an amazing movie. All those people that have reservations about it being overly preachy or religious, it's absolutely not. It leaves it open to your interpretation. The movie's great. Go watch it. And now for my number one. This one
Yeah.
was a really tough choice.
No, it wasn't. God.
I had many sleepless nights coming up with this pick. I was actually going haywire. I thought, you know, it would have been easy. You know, I thought, you know, it just would have came to me like a premium rush, but...
Yeah, this is terrible. This is awful.
Absolutely.
I'm just watching Hermano sling barbs.
And I was like, you know what? I just need to get away. I need to clear my head. So I rented a cabin in the woods. And man, that cabin was shitty. So I was like, I need to get out of here. I ran outside and I screamed at the sky and I said, show me something real. Fuck faith. And I waited for a response and nothing. And I said, fuck it. I'll do it myself. I'll pick it myself. I picked the gray.
There we go.
Number one, baby.
That journey was not worth it.
Oh yes, it was.
No.
The gray. Oh, so good. And you know what? I went through my ticket stubs because I save all my ticket stubs from all the movies I've seen through the year, and that's how I go through and pick my top 10. And it was actually the first movie I saw in theaters all year, The Gray. And you know what? I went into it. Like, I've already talked about this movie at length. I've actually rewatched it. We reviewed it. I talked about it on a rewatch. I've seen it like four times already. And the greatest compliment I can give to a movie, and I've said this before, is that every time I watch it, I want to watch it again and again and again, and I never get tired of it. And this movie for me this year was the movie that I've seen the most, and that I want to keep rewatching because, like I said, I went into it. It was marketed a certain way, and I'm like going ho-hum. I'm just going to go see this movie. It'll be fun, a fun time at the theater watching Liam Neeson punch wolves. Absolutely was not what was represented in the trailer, and it delivered something completely different, completely deep, emotional, dealing with life and death. Characters that each character is getting a little time to shine. They're treated with respect. They're even their deaths are treated with respect. The pacing of this movie is phenomenal. Wolf attacks come out of nowhere. The threat is constantly there. They're dealing with so much at all times. The poem in the movie is pretty awesome for being fairly simple, and it really echoes, you know, the sentiment of the movie. And it's by far my favorite movie of the year, and it stuck with me all year.
I agree with everything you've said about the movie, but it just didn't leave as much of an impression on me as it did you two.
Yeah, I guess, I don't know, I guess I'm just at a different place where, like, I saw this movie and it just blew me away. I can't even fully explain why it blew me away, but I think a huge part of it is I had no expectations going in, and it blew me away more so than any other movie, you know? Like, no one was talking about it, really. Everyone kind of had dismissed it, and I watched it, and I was like, I want to champion this movie because people do not know what this movie is about if they're just solely basing it on what they saw in the trailer. So those are my top 10.
And it's funny that your 1 and 2 are both life and death movies.
Yeah, and I don't know. It's just, maybe I'm getting older. Am I getting older?
You're maturing.
I'm maturing.
I won't say you're getting older. You're maturing.
You want me to recap?
Sure.
From 10 to 1, Cloud Atlas, Chronicle, The Dark Knight Rises, Prometheus, Silver Linings Playbook, The Master, Looper, Beast of the Southern Wild, Life of Pi, and The Gray.
So the only movie that overlaps on all three of our lists is Looper.
Now, I have a question for you, Tim, that I want to pose. I've already posed it to you, but I haven't posed it to Wally. Now, Life of Pi is your number one.
That's right.
It's my number two. Now,
that's
even
right.
Though Tim hasn't seen it, that's still
he
higher
needs to see it.
Than what did you give Looper? Wasn't it like your fifth?
Like, Looper's
number
like
five.
Looper's in the.
It was your what? Like number seven?
No, it was my number three.
Oh, was it? And it was my number four.
Uh-huh.
So I think a 2 and a 1 beat out a 3, 4, and a 5.
Well, no, it doesn't because I haven't seen Life of Pi, so it doesn't count towards a collective, a first time watchers collective. But...
Tim, I jest. I'm totally fine with Looper. I love that movie, so.
And, you know, last year's first-time watchers movie of the year was Attack the Block.
Yes.
And this year's is Looper. I think it's worthy of being
absolutely.
A movie of the year, if it's collective, right?
I have no problem with that whatsoever.
That's official.
I have some honorable mentions.
Go for it.
Argo, Lincoln, Compliance, The Raid, The Hobbit, Zero Dark Thirty, and Moonrise Kingdom. And did you guys go over, like, disappointments of the year?
No.
I know we did that last year. I have a few.
Go for it.
John Carter, which I saw, which I didn't have high expectations for, but I think it could have been so much better. Like, it just missed being, I think, a pretty decent movie. Abraham Lincoln Vampire Hunter.
Amen there.
Super disappointed because
Yep.
I've already talked about this. I read the book. The book is far superior to the movie. They totally butchered the book.
And I
Not,
wanted to
I
see
could tell by the
vampire. I wanted
trailers.
to see more vampire hunting by Abraham Lincoln.
I had no interest
Yeah.
in seeing that movie, and even with no interest, there were no expectations met. That's just awful.
Tim's gonna think I'm just gut punching him right now, but Haywire,
Oh, I'm with you on that one too.
I was totally disappointed by that movie. I mean,
With the cast that it boasted and
yeah, the
like,
cast, the director, I don't know. I don't know how the fuck that movie failed so hard for me. But this movie failed even harder for me. Cabin in the Woods.
you have to rewatch that movie.
Yeah,
I
you and I
had no
should rewatch
intention.
that because, like, after listening to a number of different other reviews for Cabin in the
Yep.
Woods, I want to go back and see this and see it with a different set of eyes.
I may give it another chance, but as it stands right now, I think this movie is nothing more than a spoof movie. I really don't see why
Oh
people are
my
touting it
God.
as anything more.
Oh.
Because you cannot deny the fact that this movie has very similar elements to any spoof movie. They just
But
tear apart the genre that they're
no, it's
in.
it deconstruct. See,
See,
no.
there's no
So
di what's the
it,
difference between a spoof and a deconstruction?
no, a spoof movie makes fun of all the obvious elements.
What does this movie do?
It deconstructs the obvious elements, but also analyzes them as to why are they used so much.
I don't agree that it analyzes this any element of a horror
Oh
movie.
my God.
That spray
Ugh.
scene with like, oh, all of a sudden I've changed my mind. That's a fucking spoof element. You cannot deny the fact that this movie is a spoof
No,
movie that is
no.
touted as something more important than a spoof movie.
No, sorry.
That's all it is to me.
Wow.
And finally, I actually had expectations for this movie, but after watching it, I was like, ooh. Frankenweenie. Disappointed. I mean, it's Tim Burton just going back, Tim Burton, I'm sorry, going back to the well and just kind of doing the same old thing. Very much the same reason Moonrise Kingdom wasn't on my top 10, because I actually do like that movie, but I just felt like he wasn't doing anything new. It was just Wes Anderson doing the same old thing. He's playing it safe, doing the same thing he always does. And it just, movies like Cloud Atlas just do something different and try something a little bigger. And, you know, I just like to see him try something a little different. But doesn't mind.
I think my biggest disappointment might have been, The Dark Knight Rises. I don't know. I can't really think back and look, oh, what really disappointed? Because, I never really have my expectations set too high or too low, really. So there's nothing really that stands out as the biggest disappointment for me. But, I mean, The Dark Knight Rises was pretty disappointing for me. Anything else that sticks out for you, Wally?
Haywire was a big one. Abraham Lincoln Vampire Hunter was another big one. I'm trying to think if there's any
You
others
guys
that.
both saw the Bourne movie, right?
Oh yeah.
Yeah, that was another clunker right
Yeah, there
there.
were some good elements in it, but
Yeah, it was like,
there wasn't really any need for it.
yeah.
Oh, sorry, I forgot another honorable mention, Skyfall.
Oh, it's funny you say that about the Bourne movie because there's been ads for the DVD, the Blu-ray coming out, and the wife sees the commercial and says, "Oh yeah, we saw that, didn't we?" I was like, "Yeah, is that forgettable, huh?"
Yeah, very little I can remember that movie other than Jeremy Renner on a motorcycle at the end.
Yeah. So what we take out of this is go see Looper.
Yeah, that's gonna be
Right?
our movie of the year.
All right. Okay, that does it for this episode of the First Time Watchers podcast. You can find us on Facebook by searching First Time Watchers. We post movie news and updates that we think you would be interested in. And you can email us at firsttimewatchers@gmail.com.
You can follow us on Twitter at 1STTimeWatchers at twitter.com.
Or follow us on our Tumblr page, firsttimewatchers.tumblr.com.
Oh, it's so good to have you back, Ramona.
Yay.
Please download our episodes on iTunes and feel free to leave a review. Any feedback is greatly appreciated. And if you have any suggestions of movies for us to watch, send a tweet, an email, or post on our Facebook page. And stay tuned for our next episode. We'll be talking about our most anticipated movies of 2013 and review Silver Linings Playbook.
That's the First Time Watchers podcast because we like to watch.
So, how do the waveforms look now?
Those look a little small. Let me turn this up a little bit.
And
So when we talk
now
at
the
normal
waveforms are a
volume,
little bit bigger.
oh, we all
yeah,
sounded.
so just speak at your normal volume. Yeah, that looks actually pretty good right there. See how it's like, even at the peaks, it's not quite hitting the top. Like, that's what we don't want right there.
When I
Where
just
it's
said,
like way
yep,
up top,
like
because that's
that.
when it gets crackly.
Because it seems like shouting. He's like, "Wah!
So that's the only thing is
Don't
like,
mention headhunters again!"
see, like, if you do that, like, it just goes crazy. Like, So
don't mention Headhunters.
Why won't Wally watch the fucking Facebook movie?
Walter, you should see it. It's better than you think.
I'm not going to. I'm not moving on this one.
But you should.
That's pretty good. Okay, let's try this, man.